The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
All right, good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to the show. It is Wednesday, August 21st, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. And if I sound a little funny, it's because I am battling a massive head cold today. So, like the substitute teacher who comes in with a hangover, it's video day. That's right, we're going to play some videos. But for those of you listening on the podcast, don't fret, because this is some great audio content as well. In fact, the video is really just a static shot. The audio is really what's important here. We've got more coverage from Seattle Hemp Fest, specifically the Seattle Hemp Fest Hemposium stage, where some of my favorite activists on the planet were a part of a panel called Legalization in the United States, basically what's happening in places other than the West. And on that panel includes Georgia's Sharon Ravert, North Carolina's Rebecca Forbes, Virginia's Michael Krawitz, and Michigan's Brandy Zink on a panel that was hosted and moderated by Mickey Norris from the West Coast Leaf. So we'll play that in its entirety. It's a long panel. It's about 40 minutes long, so we're going to compress our schedule a little bit today. We won't have a behind the headlines segment. We're going to go to our music segment early today. So if you set your watches for 20 after, you might want to rewind a little bit, because we have got The Toys doing their classic Smoke Two Joints live on the Hemp Fest main stage. And they had to keep telling people that this is an original song of The Toys. Most people know it as a tune from Sublime when they made the cover and got some big ratings with that. But The Toys actually did this first, Smoke Two Joints, and so we'll bring that to you live today. Also on today's show, we have got some 420 radio news to bring to you. The CNN Sanjay Gupta special is still having reverberations in our nation's capital, where for 2 days in a row now, reporters have asked the Obama White House spokesperson whether or not Dr. Gupta's reversal on medical marijuana means anything to Mr. Obama, whether that means he's going to change his policies, continue his raids. We'll talk about that in our 420 radio news. And speaking of raids, got a note from one of our listeners. There was a raid in Michigan in Ann Arbor. We'll tell you about that. Also, the state officials in Colorado and Washington are going right ahead with legalization. They believe the Department of Justice isn't going to stop them. We'll talk a little bit about House Republicans pushing drug testing for food stamps and how stupid that is, and a really interesting story about a medical meth user. All that and more coming up on The Russ Belville Show.
You cut people, you smoke trees till you get what you need now. Designer drugs are meant to smoke to get through the day. You always get them so high.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers, because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa. Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.
Everywhere you go in Washington State, things are greener than ever. Why? Because last November, Washington voters made adult recreational use of cannabis legal, which is why the High Times U.S. Cannabis Cup is coming to Seattle once again to salute Washington's historic victory. If you love cannabis, then get yourself over to the High Times U.S. Cannabis Cup on September 7th and 8th as the marijuana community gathers in force to celebrate our newfound freedom. Meet the businesses of the emerging cannabis industry. Learn about cultivation, topical oils, concentrates, edibles, and more. Sample dabs, buds, and delectable morsels of cannabis cuisine. Then rock out on Saturday night at our Smokin' Hot concert featuring Slightly Stupid and Redman. And of course on Sunday evening, we present the U.S. Cannabis Cups for the top indicas, sativas, hybrids, edibles, and concentrates of the great state of Washington. Plus, we honor professional traveler and outspoken cannabis advocate Rick Steves with the High Times Lifetime Achievement Award. Come to Fremont Studios on September 7th and 8th in Seattle for a historic celebration. Go to MedCanCup.com for details. Be part of the growing cannabis community.
This is your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, August 21st, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Obama does not support changes to medical marijuana laws at this time. This from Huffington Post. White House spokesman Josh Earnest was asked for the second day in a row if CNN chief medical correspondent Sanjay Gupta's recent reversal on medical marijuana use and his apology for misleading the public had any bearing on Obama's position on the issue. The administration's position has been clear and consistent for some time now that while the prosecution of drug trafficking remains an important priority, said Earnest, the president and the administration believe that targeting individual marijuana users, especially those with serious illnesses and their caregivers, is not the best allocation of federal law enforcement resources. I looked it up, and the president last talked about this in an interview he had with Barbara Walters in December when she asked a similar question. The president acknowledged that the priority, in terms of the dedication of law enforcement resources, should be targeted toward drug kingpins, traffickers, and others who perpetuate violence in the conduct of the drug trade. That is the best use of our law enforcement resources. But at the same time, the president does not, at this point, advocate a change in the law. That's the official statement from the Obama White House. And as Huffington Post reported Tuesday, the Obama administration has cracked down hard on medical marijuana, even in states that have legalized its use. A recent report found that this administration spent nearly $300 million on medical marijuana intervention through lawsuits, indictments, and asset forfeiture attempts by the Justice Department. Ann Arbor Medical Marijuana Dispensary raided by the DEA, from AnnArbor.com. Federal authorities raided People's Choice Alternative Medicine, a medical marijuana dispensary on Ann Arbor's west side, Tuesday afternoon. Drug Enforcement Administration Special Agent Rich Isaacson confirmed to AnnArbor.com that federal agents executed a search warrant Tuesday at the dispensary near Stadium Boulevard. No one from People's Choice was available to comment about the raid when an AnnArbor.com reporter went to the dispensary Tuesday afternoon. A sign on the door said, People's Choice is closed until further notice. Sorry for the inconvenience. It's the second such raid by the DEA in Washtenaw County in a month. On July 30th, a search warrant was executed at The Shop, a medical marijuana dispensary in Ypsilanti. State officials say DOJ has given tacit approval for legalized marijuana. From Talking Points Memo. Colorado officials say they believe they have tacit approval from the U.S. Justice Department to implement voter-approved laws legalizing marijuana. Another source directly involved with conversations with Justice, who asked not to be named to speak freely about private discussions, agreed with that characterization. The source stressed that Justice had not explicitly said that legalization would be allowed to continue, but the department has been routinely updated as the state has passed legislation and rules setting up a retail industry for marijuana, and has not told state authorities to stop that implementation. Retail operations are scheduled to open in January under the new law. Federal officials declined to comment. Quote, the department continues to review the initiatives in Washington and Colorado, end quote, Justice Department spokesperson Allison Price said in a statement to Talking Points Memo. House Republicans want drug tests for food stamp recipients from Washington Post. Two-thirds of beneficiaries in the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, are children, elderly, or people with disabilities. Benefits are modest, with the average recipient receiving about $133 per month. Because of the recession, caseloads have grown from 26 million in 2007 to 46 million 4 years later. SNAP expenditures have increased from $35 billion in 2007 to $80 billion in 2012. In response, House leaders are now proposing to cut $40 billion from SNAP over time. They also want to allow states to drug test SNAP applicants. SNAP recipients are somewhat more likely than others to use or misuse illicit substances. About 24% of SNAP recipients and 16% of those who don't get SNAP have used at least one illicit substance in the past year. This drops to 13.1% for SNAP recipients and 7.5% for non-recipients if one excludes marijuana. And if one excludes marijuana, then abuse or dependence of other illicit substances is rare within the SNAP population. By far, the most common substance use disorders among SNAP recipients and among the general population arise from alcohol use, behaviors generally left undetected by drug testing. Brian Phillips, medical meth user, fights Indian tribe for return of his truck. California resident Brian Phillips insists the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian community stole his $25,000 Toyota Tundra pickup. The vehicle was seized under tribal law in December after a security guard caught him smoking pot in the parking lot of a casino. The tribe also took his 2 ounces of hashish, 8 ball of crystal meth, marijuana, and pain pills. He considers his meth medical for relief of his sciatica pain. This has been your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, August 21st, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we have live video from The Toys performing Smoke Two Joints at the HempFest main stage this last weekend. We will follow that with the Cannabis Community Chat, the Seattle HempFest Hemposium panel on legalization across the United States, featuring Sharon Raver, Rebecca Forbes, Michael Kravitz, and Brandy Zink. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Irie Wednesday, featuring reggae, ska, and other world music genres. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, welcome back, everybody. I know the Daily Toker Tune's a little early, but we got so much video to get in, we got to get it in as quickly as possible. This is The Toys at the main stage with Smoke Two Joints.
Stop me, son, you do the best you can. But there will never
Community includes a diverse set of activists and nonprofits working to end the prohibition of marijuana. We take the time to hear the stories of reform on the.
We go straight to the panel.
Thank Seattle Hemp Fest for once again putting on a wonderful Hemp Fest and Hemposium stage with full of panels and everything. And we encourage you all to support Hemp Fest if you haven't already. Make a donation to the buckets that are around or in and out of the exits, because it costs a lot of money to put this festival on, and they really need your support. My name is Mickey Norris. I'm going to moderate today. I have lots of hats myself. And thank you. I've been involved in this movement since Chris Conrad, my husband, dragged me into it at the end of '88 when he became very aware of what was happening and why marijuana was prohibited in the first place. And we've been activists for a long time doing public education projects, including the hemp awareness with lots of flyers that we've produced over the years. We've done the Human Rights and the Drug War exhibit, and we have a small excerpt in the corner there attached to that green banner at the end there. Prisoners of the Drug War. I have my own project, Cannabis Consumers, campaign, which is at cannabisconsumers.org, where I ask people to come out of the closet to stand up for our equal rights and to dispel all the myths and stereotypes of who cannabis consumers are. And more recently, we did the West Coast Leaf newspaper, which now is on a print hiatus, but we're still have an online presence at westcoastleaf.com. But enough about me. There's so much going on in this country right now. It's a very exciting time, and things are amping up. And starting with right here in Washington, it's so great to be in the free state of Washington. Yay for you. We're in California. We don't have this right to carry an ounce in our pocket without harassment and being completely legal doing so. So it's a major step in the right direction. It's not over yet, obviously. There's still people losing their kids and too many people going to prison and people losing their jobs because of marijuana prohibition. But it's a fantastic first step, and it's a message along with Colorado being heard around the world, and people are listening and people are reacting and they're saying, we want this too. So that's a great thing that's happening. But I want to now introduce my panel here of activists, mostly women, and now we got Michael who joined us to substitute for another wonderful woman, Tanya Davis, who couldn't be here today. But we're going to start with Sharon Ravert. And Sharon lives in the beautiful state of Georgia, but under archaic pot laws. She is a mom for marijuana and is executive director of Peachtree Normal in Georgia. She got involved in the fight to end prohibition when a SWAT team came in and took her 19-year-old out of bed with a gun to her head. Wow. Sharon.
Hello, and thanks for having me. Yeah, like you said, it is wonderful to be in a free state, although we're not quite free enough here. We've got some work to do, like she said. We all are a lot more free than we are in Georgia. We started it out, we passed a medical marijuana law in 1980, and we rested on our laurels and didn't make them do what they were supposed to do, and look where we are now. So keep fighting. And like somebody said earlier, don't let them outlaw hash. We need hash too. Yeah. Like she said, 7 years ago, the SWAT team, Appalachian Drug Task Force in my county, came in with six armed guys in SWAT team uniforms. We had the GBI, Georgia Bureau of Investigation, and our local police force, most of which I knew and taught. They thought my daughter was a big baller drug dealer, and when they came in, they searched the house for 2 hours, and they found 1.5 grams of marijuana. Ooh. And they found a few pieces of glass and an old grow light of her mama's that had never been used to grow marijuana, although I thought about it. But with that in mind, in Georgia, if you get caught with pot and you have a couple extra boxes of baggies, an old scale that you used when you were young because you're on a diet on Weight Watchers or something like that, they immediately turn it into a felony. And the whole reason they do it is because 95% of the people that go to court in Georgia take a plea. And so they get you with a small amount of pot, and then they put it up to a felony. And of course, when your daughter is facing 26 years in jail for less than a good, nice joint, you take a plea deal. We took it all the way to court. She got a really good deal, and we ended up going with it. Of course, if it had been her mama, I would have probably dared them to find a jury in my city that would have convicted me. When this happened, I owned my own business. I was an ambassador with the Chamber of Commerce. I knew all the police. The sheriff's dog sat on the sofa with me every night when he was out of town while I rolled my joints. And I wasn't too worried about the police, but you're not safe no matter who you are in Georgia. I didn't expect this though, but, you know. So anyway, what I started doing was because I started talking to my 600 clients. And I decided we had 2 years to kick the sheriff out. And when I started talking in this little Bible Belt conservative area, I realized that everybody kind of agreed with me. They were real close, in fact. There were a few I had to change. But I kept a list on a spreadsheet. At the time, I had 600 clients. 2 of them didn't agree. We get it in Georgia. And what y'all done out here on the West Coast is coming to Georgia, and we're not going to stop until it's over. We're not going to stop until it's over. 2 years after this happened to us, the sheriff lost in a landslide in our town. And we got our new sheriff. Right, and if we can do that in a small town in Georgia, we can do that all over the country. And I dare everybody to stand up and do this. You can do it. I'm a simple mom. I wasn't born an activist, but you can make an activist.
Yes. Thank you, Sharon. Wow. So as you can see, the prison industrial complex is alive and well in the United States, unfortunately. Still profiting off of us and keeping us in a state of vulnerability and fear. So we really need to stand up like she does and fight this. Our next speaker is Brandy Zink, who's with Americans for Safe Access of Michigan. She's been a longtime activist as well and also works in a very good law office in Michigan as well, the Law Office of Bad Able. Thanks, Brandy. Thank you. It's great to be back in HempFest. This is my second time, my first time speaking here. So it's an honor to represent the Midwest here in the Northwest. I want to talk a little bit about Ohio because I spent 10 years in Ohio. I'm the former executive director of the Ohio Patient Network, which was a group that was started in 2000 by patients in Ohio that had there's no legal access to medicine in Ohio, but patients needed support and education, and so we just founded a group, and we founded a lobbying group, and we worked hard to introduce legislation. I was part of 5 bills that were introduced in Ohio over 10 years, and we worked really hard through the legislature, educating, building coalitions, and doing a lot of good work. Ohio has some election problems with election fraud, etc. And so the timing wasn't right for a statewide ballot initiative, but now they're working on that, and the group is called Ohio Rights Group. And I urge you to support the work that's going out in the Midwest, because here in the West Coast we see so much progress, and we're hoping it's going to trickle down and make its way across the country. But we've had a lot of work that we've done in the Midwest, and we're inching forward incrementally. I want to say congratulations to Illinois becoming one of the newest medical marijuana states. That's right. Illinois, they passed their law, and while no law is going to be perfect, I'm happy that some patients in Illinois will finally have access, and that the governor was able to sign this bill. And it was due to the advocacy of some advocates that have been working 10, 12 years nonstop fighting. So the work we have in the Midwest is very hard work. Not all the states have the power of the ballot initiative. Ohio was one that does, and so is Michigan. So the path that Michigan took to get medical marijuana, which we passed by 63% in 2008, we took 5 cities, passed medical marijuana over a couple of years, and then city by city, incrementally, we set up the support so that we could do it statewide with the help of marijuana policy projects. So now we have medical marijuana in Michigan since 2008. So 5 years later, through our path of implementation, we got past the immediate high and the ecstasy of the win, and really realized that once you pass a law, then the implementation is where it's all in the details. And I think that you're going to see that here in Washington and Colorado and elsewhere. So as we've been fighting in Michigan to protect the rights that we have, in Michigan patients can grow 12 plants, or you can designate a caregiver, and then a caregiver may be able to care up to 5 people and themselves. So the caregiver system and the patient system as we thought it was able to be, if a patient was able to possess it and a caregiver was able to possess it, then we thought that there was some sort of patient-to-patient transfer, or caregiver-to-caregiver, or patient-to-caregiver, so on and so on. But our courts have interpreted it much differently, and so we're seeing in Michigan where patients who have joined the medical marijuana program are fully compliant, are for some reason being arrested and being raided, and in Michigan we have asset forfeiture where they can seize your property and then put you on trial or not, but you, whether you're convicted or not, they can still take your property. So this is affecting patients all over the state. It's creating a state of fear. A lot of patients have decided to exit the program. But nevertheless, I think Michigan is one of the fastest growing medical marijuana programs, where we've had over 200,000 people have applied for a card. So it's pretty incredible that in the Midwest, where caregivers are growing. And by the way, Michigan has reciprocity. So if you are a legal patient, welcome you to come to Michigan. I work for attorney Matthew Abel, who's the executive director of Michigan Normal, and I have the honor of working at the Cannabis Council Law Firm. So I answer the telephone, so if you call, I'm hoping that you don't have a big problem and a big raid, because unfortunately most people call an attorney's office are not calling to say hi, I'm having a great day. And these folks are in desperate need of help, and there's the police, there's lack of education, and so it's in some ways a real big mess, and the courts are just making a big mess of it. So to try to solve some of this, the advocates, and there are great activists in Michigan. There are multiple groups. There are Michigan Normal, there's Americans for Safe Access, National Patients' Rights Organization, Michigan Compassion, and then there's all these local compassion clubs. All of these activists are getting up and working together. We've introduced a dispensary bill in the legislature in the House of Representatives, and we have 17 sponsors. The lead sponsor is Republican. So what I've found in my work in Ohio and in Michigan is that medical cannabis is nonpartisan, and so you don't need to just focus on one side or the other, that they need to be able to come together and meet in the middle. And through having Republican sponsors who understand the compassionate conservative side of things, I suppose, they're being leaders. We have a few. Rick Calton is one of the ones who's put his name on the bill. So we're hopeful that this dispensary bill will pass, because it's going to clear up a lot of the confusion about what patients can do and caregivers can do with their excess medicine. Or the state of Michigan too had at one point 500 dispensaries. And we don't have in our law any provision that prohibits them or that permits them. But local communities have issued licenses. And local communities have issued licenses to some. And so there are dispensaries, about 100 of them left in Michigan, that are serving patients and going strong. So the Midwest is very active. Last thing I want to leave you with is that we put 5 cities on the ballot last year for different marijuana issues, and we won them all. Overwhelmingly won them all. So that in the cities of Flint and Detroit, an ounce of cannabis in private for 21 and up is decriminalized. And we're going to put it on the ballot for 3 more cities too. So I'm real proud of the activists in Michigan. I'm not doing this on my own. There are hundreds of us who are working and thousands of us on the sidelines. So thank you for having me. And if you want to talk more about Michigan or Ohio, I'll be there in the Knowledge Hut for a little bit. Thank you, Brandy. Yeah, really excited to hear what's going on there. And glad to hear what's going on there. It's going in the right direction. Our next speaker is Rebecca Forbes, who is a mother, activist, once a prisoner of the drug war for cannabis, and now a medical cannabis patient and advocate for the sick and suffering in the illegal Bible Belt of America. Now, you're from North Carolina?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, take it, Rebecca.
Thank you.
It's been an honor to be in Seattle, an illegal state where it's so free to use cannabis. Like Sharon Raver, my family was raided in 1998 My home, my child, all my money, my car was taken. It took like a 2-year process to get me tried in court, but once in court, I was sentenced to 3 years in North Carolina State Prison for growing marijuana. So the drug war means a lot to me, and what the lady said about the prisoners. We can't forget about them, the people in prison. I didn't belong in prison. I'm not a person that belonged in prison. And that's enough to get even people that don't use cannabis to understand that. And it's hard for me. I have people wanting me to write a book about my 3 years in prison. That's a hard thing for me to swallow. It's hard for me to relive. I'm a mother, a grandmother. I have children. My daughter was taken by CPS right on site when they came in on me. They allowed her to take her dog with her. So I watched my 8-year-old child be taken in a car by strangers that had never been away from mom and dad, who were big cannabis growers in North Carolina. We lived in the mountains for 16 years. My ex and my daughter's father had grown marijuana since a teenager, and at the age of 21, I met him and was with him for 16 years. We were raided on average once a year. They got us in 98. I got out of prison in 2002. I now live in North Carolina. I'm a huge advocate for reform and repealing all cannabis laws. I work with the North Carolina State Legislature. We worked on 3 medical bills that they've killed, 2 decrim acts that they've killed, 1 medical cannabis study bill that they recently killed this session, and we're going right back at them in 2014 with another one. I'm the East Coast Director for the American Cannabis Coalition under Craig Buresh. I sit on the board of directors nationally for that organization. I have a Facebook page. You can Google my name, Rebecca Bortz, and find pages of my work. I don't want to get into all that today because it's a panel, so it's going to make it short and sweet. I also work in Washington, D.C. for Overgrow the Government. I'm the assistant director. We do all the 420 D.C. events. We've had people like Mike Hyde. We've had Gary Johnson's public people come there and speak for us. We've had ASA. We've had Moms for Marijuana. We've had the Normal Women's Alliance, Normal, NPD. What my goal is with Overgrow the Government is to get us all in D.C. where this is going to end, people, on federal levels. We've got to take it to D.C. I want to see 1 million people standing there on 420. I want to see us tell D.C., and that's a hard place to come down into. It's a very draining day. Seattle Hemp Fest has been draining, but let me tell you, I've been happier in the last 3 days than I've been in years. I want my family in this environment. I don't want my family in an environment where they can kick your door in, put guns to your head, run dogs through your house, and terrorize you in front of your children. We've got to think about the kids. Think about the kids. Think about what it does to a child when you take their parent and put them spread eagle on the floor with a gun to their head in front of them. That's what people need to think about that don't use cannabis. And we'll get this done. We've got to unite. Nobody's the best in this movement. Nobody's the greatest. We're all doing our part. It takes a village to raise a child. And the cannabis movement is a baby. And we all got to work together so that people like Sharon and I that live in the ice age of cannabis reform don't have to live in fear anymore.
Thank you, Rebecca. I'm so sorry to hear what you had to go through.
I might want to mention, if you want to see the full testimonies of what happened to my family in 1998, I was in the documentary The Exile Nation Project. It's a film by Charles Shaw and the Ted Wirth Charitable Trust. My daughter's testimony is on the Open Democracy site for that movie, and it's a very powerful testimony of the drug war from the eyes of a child that was taken from her parents, and I suggest you go watch that. The Exile Nation Project, on, you can Google it and you'll find it. Thank you.
Right on.
You know, the taking away of the children from their parents and going to prison
that's what actually motivated me to really step up my my activism in a major way with our Human Rights and the Drug War Project, because it just seemed so wrong that our government had a policy of orphaning children, and it was against the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that has a provision that says that we're supposed to be protecting the integrity of the family, aside from all these other protections like cruel and unusual punishment and religious freedom and different things that we are denied in this country, unfortunately, still. We also, in that exhibit at the end there, I have photos of people who were killed by law enforcement as well. There have been people killed, and they're lucky they survived their SWAT raids, because sometimes, you know, people come up with a gun and they think they're pointing it at them, that's the end of their lives, you know, during that raid, when they just find, you know, like a joint or something like that, or nothing in some cases. And we have somebody in our project there who, a quadriplegic man with a couple ounces in his backpack, who was brought into jail, and he could not even, you know, he needed special care, and they put him in jail, and he died within 10 days because they couldn't meet his needs. And that was just for, you know, a few ounces as well. And not to mention this other man that you'd read about over there, who also, some agents was trying to entrap somebody to sell him some marijuana, and he refused to sell him. He got in a fight with the undercover agent, and the other agents came, and they shot him and killed him too. So, I mean, it's totally out of control. These horrible stories are still going on, so we need to step up our activism and end this injustice and cruelty. But speaking of that, we have a great activist next to me, Michael Crowitz, from Virginia's Against Drug Violence, and now more recently he's standing up for the rights of veterans in this country, and he's with Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access. Thank you, Michael.
Before I say anything about what I'm doing, I just want to pay homage to the panel that I'm on here. I'm quite honored, really, to be on a panel like this. You know, there's a perception out there that, you know, the big organizations do things, there are big entities that do things, there's big wigs that get paid lots of money to do things, and it's been my, you know, general observation, that's not what does things. It's individual people that get caught up in their life, you know, gets on the line, and they have to work on you know, fighting the tide in their area, in North Carolina and Georgia. These are tough places to work. Michigan is actually less tough, I think. but still, you know, not even in the same universe as Seattle. So thank you so much for everybody. I'm Michael Crowitz. I run Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access. We're the guys that were behind the scenes working with the VA, actually connected to Marty Chilcutt out in Michigan, who was the guy responsible, you may know, of the Colorado Amendment 20 medical marijuana law. That was his little thing he did. Then he went to Michigan and started this organization, which I took over. His work connected to mine. I was working inside the VA on pain management issues, medical marijuana being the main one that gets you kicked off your pain management. That's the main pain management issue, is medical marijuana, which for many years I wasn't even able to mention the medical marijuana aspect of it. I worked in this strange netherworld inside the VA, and my netherworld crashed with Marty's netherworld, and the ACLU, a little bit of help from the EPA and SDP and everybody else, and MPP, everybody chipped in on this one. We got a national Veterans Affairs policy on medical marijuana that protects veterans back in 2010. Yeah. So if you're a veteran and you're in a state where there's legal medical marijuana, you've got your registration or card or medical cannabis recommendation, however they do it, you're protected from and should be free from fear of any kind of reprisal at the VA hospital. And that's what we stand for. Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access is to help in those cases where you don't have that experience, so contact us if you run into that situation. But I think it's important, to touch base here on the state stuff that we're doing. But just quickly, nationally, we haven't spoken at HempFest. We got the VA policy passed in 2010. We held our breath in 2011, literally, and we started working in 2012. Now in 2013, we're working on two main tracks. One is because the VA policy is hinged on the state medical marijuana policy, now we're working in the states to make sure that ailments veterans commonly suffer, like post-traumatic stress, like chronic pain, like even cancer, and traumatic brain injury, other ailments that are very common to veterans. They're common in the public as well, but more common, unfortunately, in veterans. Make sure that these are covered in the state law. And also, we're working in the Congress to try to get congressional hearings on some of the stuff I'll talk about in a minute, the importance of the cannabinoid receptor system and the knowledge that we're gaining about it and what it means to veterans. So those are our two main tracks. We started working on post-traumatic stress as a national issue when the data was sufficient to work on it as a national issue. My colleague working in Virginia, Al Byrne, Commander Al Byrne, Lieutenant Commander for the Navy, has been working on post-traumatic stress in the VA for decades, and it's not a new issue. It goes back to battle fatigue and shell shock. It's all been the same thing, different names, different wars. But now we know more about it because of the science of the brain. This cannabinoid receptor system science that we, if you look it up on Google, whatever, just amazing stuff. If you never looked into it, it's just going to blow your mind. Absolutely blow your mind. We have these drugs that are being shoved down veterans' throats that a couple of them are approved for post-traumatic stress. They suck. The rest of them that are being used are actually being used against and over the warnings of the Army, who said don't use them. That's how bad they are. And you know they're not going to warn against the pharmaceutical unless it's really bad. And it's pushing them. It says a suicide right on the warnings, interactions, that you're giving it to somebody who's maybe has suicide as maybe a problem that they're trying to overcome. Not smart. So anyway, if you look at the bottles of all these drugs, you'll see that the mechanism of action is essentially unknown. But the mechanism of action in cannabis and post-traumatic stress and other neurological injuries that we know of now, neurological pain and some other syndromes, we now understand pretty well this cannabinoid receptor system in the brain, how it works, and that's the mechanism of action. So that with that science now, we were ready and armed to work on it. We had only one state when we started to have post-traumatic stress listed as a condition allowed. That was New Mexico, and that actually came under attack. So one of the first things we had to do was help Drug Policy Alliance in New Mexico and others, a bunch of local veteran coalitions, to fight to keep that on the books. And thankfully, we kept it on the books, kicked their butt, really kept it on the books, and made a point of keeping it on the books in New Mexico. So post-traumatic stress is not going away as a qualifying condition in New Mexico. And then since then, we've added Delaware, Maine, Oregon, and of course Massachusetts is covered under there. Just like California law that a doctor recommends for what doctors recommend for instead of this list from the legislature. So we're really kicking butt. We're working in Michigan. We've had a turnaround in Michigan. We've been beating our heads against the wall to get into a panel that actually voted our way, and then they said, well, not enough people for the vote. And they said, oh, well, we'll get a new vote. Oh, the panel shut down. So we thought we were dead in the water, and then they opened up the panel, came up with another vote, and now it looks like it's going our way. So Michigan's working pretty good. We're working in Colorado, believe it or not, has actually become a little difficult because of legalization. All the emphasis and all the good activists are working on that. It's a little hard to work on adding post-traumatic stress. And in fact, in Oregon, we added post-traumatic stress in the legislature, and then it did a big dispensary bill, and I think it would be the same thing now. There's a lot of work to be done on these bigger things. And we recognize that adding one condition is not the big issue, but we're very glad we've been able to get this much traction and get this much done. So that's kind of a lay of the land. And you have to understand that post-traumatic stress is not like a personal failing. I mean, that's what the science is telling us of the brain and the cannabinoids, is that you have a neurological symptom. It's a real, like, damage that's done at the neurological level that can be repaired by cannabis. It can be helped treated by cannabis, but it also can be helped repaired by cannabis if it's treated well and properly. That's what the science tells us. And it tells us that even though it may not be a physical trauma, it is nonetheless a physical injury. And you know, that's a very important thing that people need to understand, that they're not somehow weak or something like that if they have post-traumatic stress, but somehow or another you put 10 people in a bus, you blow up the bus, and a certain number of them are going to have post-traumatic stress. Imagine if you keep running the same people through the bus, you'll keep getting a diminishing return of post-traumatic stress. And it's like pulling a spring. You pull it too far and it won't go back to its original shape. Some of them will give a little quicker than others. It's just a quirk in our universe who it hits. And that's why we work on that. I really can't tell you how much it means to be at HempFest. This is the first time our organization is here, but we're running a little behind. I had a hell of an ordeal getting out of here, but we're here now. And I'll be speaking throughout the day and kind of introducing ourselves. To our knowledge, really the only veterans service organization working on medical marijuana. Of course, we work on any medical access issue. If a doctor says you're supposed to get it, you should go into your doctor's office or the VA or wherever and not be harassed over that. So that's pretty simple, right? So that's what we do, veterans for medical cannabis access. We work with patients at a time. That's where we get a lot of this cannabinoid stuff I've been throwing around. If you want to do some research, medicalcannabis.com, patients at a time. And
when is the next patients at a time conference next year?
Yeah, it's coming up 1 year out.
In Portland?
It's looking like it's going to be in Portland, yeah. But also, too, Mary Lynn Mathry, who is a co-founder of Patients at a Time, is also a registered nurse, a Navy vet. She's actually been working on a nursing association, and kudos to the nursing association for taking the lead in Arizona to add post-traumatic stress, and we're working down there now on that. But she'll be doing hopefully some seminars around Colorado and elsewhere, so you should be able to find patients at a time. In this crowd, I definitely want to notate that I go to a dispensary or collection, collective, whatever, and I say, you got videos, and they've got hundreds of videos, but when I say patients at a time has videos, these are not your ordinary videos. We had a radio seminar that we just did last Friday, and Raphael Meshulam, who's in Israel, whose team discovered THC, was on the show. Yeah, Dr. Grinspoon was on a previous show. So I mean, these are folks that are really out there, really cutting edge, doing the science at Patients at a Time is gathered. They're kind of the in-between the geeks and the Cannabinoid Research Society, which I imagine, how many people have ever heard of the International Cannabinoid Research Society? There you go, good number. That's the geek squad, right, of our group. And then you got Normal, Puffem down in Florida, that'd be good on the other end of the scale, right? And then in between, you got Patients at a Time. They're kind of the bridge. So, yeah, I definitely offer to y'all to look up Patients at a Time and check out the video series that they've got from these great sources.
Thank you, Michael. And you can also hear him on Time for Hemp. Right. Also, he has a regular spot on, is that Thursdays?
That's where that seminar was. That's where the seminar was. I was just talking about. We did a huge seminar. Check it out on the archives, Time for Hemp. Timeforhemp.com, American Freedom Radio Network, the archive is there.
Okay.
Amazing 2-hour thing on medical marijuana. Dr. Mish, it's amazing to have, with Skype and the internet, you have people from all over the world on this thing at once.
Okay, and then we have Casper Leach, the host of the show, and the audience here as well. And hopefully you can tune in at 10 o'clock Pacific time and American Freedom
Radio. Do you mind if I ask a question real quick, Michael? The International Cannabinoid Research Society, they're located in RTP in Raleigh, correct?
They
have an address there.
Yeah.
Is that the same society that you guys are working with?
The International Cannabis Research Society, then it changed to International Cannabinoid Research Society. It's kind of like the bridge between the industry that's very interested in cannabinoid medicine for treatment for cancer, Parkinson's, whatever. The industry is ready to spend billions of dollars on cannabinoid medicine. They don't want it to be even called marijuana. That's why it's a state kind of way. But the Cannabinoid Research Society is very independent, objective source of information. ICRS, look it up on the web.
See, that was what was confusing to us, because we fought three bills in North Carolina, and in 2009 they came to RTP, and their annual report was done on K2, not even actual natural cannabinoids.
Yeah, that's just unfortunate. A lot of government research. they don't fund what we want.
You see what we're dealing with. We're arrested and thrown in prison in North Carolina, but we have Duke Medicine who's studying cannabis. I've heard it's growing on the roof. We have the International Cannabinoid Research Society and RTP. Irv Rosenfeld and LB's federal cans of marijuana are shipped out of Raleigh, North Carolina from the federal building.
Yep.
So it's very hypocritical what we're going through in the South.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for this panel. I'd like to give you each like a few seconds to have any parting remarks before you retire to the Knowledge Hut. And if anybody has any questions for them, please engage them in conversation over there. But Rebecca, do you have anything else to add?
Yeah, I'd just like to thank you, Seattle, for starting the process across the country. We're out in Washington State. This is awesome. I've been in the mountains and toured around, beautiful state. But I got to stay in North Carolina and fight and keep my home, and let's get this across the other side of the nation, all states.
Great. I want to talk just real quick about the federal prisoners in Michigan. There's the Lansing 7 with Ryan Bazor and Lance Forsberg, and then there is Jerry Duvall and his son, the Duvall family, who was in southern Michigan. All of these folks were medical marijuana patients and caregivers who were compliant with state law, and they were raided by the DEA and are now serving time in federal prison. So Michigan has had DEA raids, and I want to put that on everyone's radar. That's why it's so important we end this federal war. So that's up to us to contact our legislators and let them know that we're not going to tolerate this anymore. And Jerry Duvall, if you want to go to change.org, there is a petition for his compassionate release. Jerry is a double organ recipient patient, so he's in critical condition in prison. He's going to rot away and die without the medical care he needs. So please go to change.org and sign the compassionate release for Jerry Duvall. Thank you, Brandy. Karen?
Well, I was here last year and had no idea I was going to speak. This was planned. And I'm not doing much better than I did last year. But I came out here last year to ask y'all to please vote yes. Just to get things going. And I'm back here today to say thank you. And as y'all enjoy your newfound freedoms, don't forget us that are still very deep in the drug war. Remember our children that are being stolen. And remember us, because we helped you guys. We called on phone banks for A64. We called on phone banks for I-502 from Georgia and the South. So when we get this stuff out there, y'all be watching and help us, okay? Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, Sharon. And if you want more information about contacting the prisoners there, somebody's coming around with this postcard, Prisoners of War, and you can find their addresses where you can write to these POWs. Did you have a last remark, Michael?
Yes, Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access. We've got a Facebook page if you want to try to find us. Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access, .org on the web. Please do say hi if there's anything that you want to talk about, or if you need any assistance for a veteran or a veteran. Also, too, we're looking for vets across the country that are suffering from post-traumatic stress to be involved in various studies. So let us know. And just to tie things together, it's a state panel. I work internationally at the UN trying to change treaty, which is tied into our federal law and the schedule. And I fight the schedule as well, both as an individual and as an organization. We're involved in Americans for Safe Access versus the DEA, which is headed for the Supreme Court. Hopefully, maybe we'll get another chance at the Supreme Court. So anyway, I want you to know that at the UN level, what's happened in Seattle, what's happened in Washington State, what's happened in Colorado, is not just important, it's central to the debate that's happening now in 2014 about changing the treaties in 2016, which will change the whole world's drug policy and stop children and families from being torn apart all over the world. So what you're doing here is having that big a ripple effect. I just, since I am there,